This is News in No Time. Ed Gordon on today's roundtable. A U.S. soldier is threatened by his colleagues in Iraq, and black coaches want a bigger ban on the Confederate flag. Joining us today to talk about these topics and more from member station WLIU in Southampton, New York, Marcelo Suarez Orozco, professor of globalization and education. He's also co-director of the Immigration Studies Department at New York University. Mary Frances Berry, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, joins us today from Morris Creative Studios in Massachusetts. And joining us via phone from the Big Apple is Michael Myers, executive director of the New York Civil Rights Coalition. I welcome you all. Let's turn our attention to what is occurring, many people say, and that is a further erosion on the press's protection. A federal prosecutor now may inspect the telephone records of two New York Times reporters in an effort to identify their confidential sources. This was handed down from a federal appeals court in New York this week, a 2-1 decision. This stems from a case, Marcelo, where a Chicago grand jury investigated into two reporters about actions that the government was planning to take against two Islamic charities. They wanted to know how, in fact, this leak came about, and the reporters were keeping their sources confidential. What does this say to what many people say is a continuing erosion to the press's protection?
A continued erosion is the key phrase here, Ed. This needs to be seen in the context of what we saw earlier in the case of the New York Times, the Time magazine, Newsweek reporters. Some reporters already spend time in jail. This is part of a general context where an increasing erosion of the kinds of tools, the kinds of general principles that has given the fourth state in our country, the press, the media, its most important ability to conduct independent work, to increase the transparency in our government. This is a split decision, and it's a sad day for journalism.
The dissenting judge, Mary, suggested that the government had failed to demonstrate it truly needed the records and that the effort to obtain reporters' phone records could alter the way news gathering was conducted. I don't think that that can be said enough. This really can, this erosion, this assault, some would say, on journalism really could determine the way news is gathered today.
Well, I think that the public has to depend on the news for getting us information that the government isn't going to get us, obviously, in this day of heightened secrecy. And it's too bad to see the freedom of the press eroded that way. But I point out that the two judges who wrote the opinion, the majority opinion, are long-serving judges. They're not new guys on the block. One of them, Amalia Kersey, is the longest-serving black woman judge now that Connie Motley is no longer there. There's also a master chess player, I understand, and Ralph Winter. They've been around a while. What it shows is how much this war on terror and terrorism has freaked out even the most moderate, thoughtful people. They did make exceptions in the majority opinion for whistleblowers and people who want to tell on folks for corruption like in the government. But I think it's really that the war on terror and terrorism since 9/11 and discussions of it have made even the most thoughtful people, like these two judges, be willing to erode freedom of the press. It's all going to be sorted out eventually in the Supreme Court, but I think it's dangerous.
It's interesting you talk about they made exceptions for whistleblowers because only about a month ago we talked about the decision or the ruling that came down on whistleblowers, which actually makes it easier for people to get rid of whistleblowers
right.
as employers. All right, Michael Myers, what's your take on this?
Well, my take is that I don't think the New York Times is in that much deep doo-doo. yes, there's been an erosion of free press rights and journalist privileges. But that's been long coming and long term. And what the appellate courts do is they follow the Supreme Court precedent. So you know why the Supreme Court is like this, it's like what it is. Amalia Kirst, by the way, who I have known as a master bridge player, I have known
that's
before she was
bridge,
on the court.
Not chess, right.
Right. And an African American. She's a very, very good judge, and she knows the law. So I think that. With the New York Times respect reporters who have, in fact, been careless. You don't have to do what they do. You just do it differently now. You Ruth Reichel, to use New York Times phrase. Ruth Reichel used to be the restaurant critic of the New York Times. She would go into restaurants in disguises. So now you have to protect your sources, and you've got to go into disguise. You've got to use cell phones. You've got to use technology that doesn't allow the government to come and subpoena your records and get your emails and all that other stuff. You just do it a different way.
Meet in the garage like Deep Throat did. And
yes, absolutely.
Pass along the information.
Absolutely. So, you know, journalists in particular can be creative and imaginative, and they just got to change their game because they're not going to get the kind of protections they need any longer for a long time now until things change from the United States Supreme Court. So do it differently, but protect your sources.
Well, in fact, that is the case that most of these journalists have been steadfast in protecting the sources, but one should note even with cell phones there are records and traces that can be looked into. All right, let's turn our attention now to a situation that continues to grow, and that is the growing violence not only perpetrated in Iraq on insurgents, but obviously what we are seeing is infighting amongst those. This from a U.S. soldier who testified on Wednesday of this week that four of his colleagues accused of murdering three Iraqis during a raid, that infamous, now infamous raid, threatened to kill him if, in fact, he told anyone. His suggestion was that they received orders from their brigade commander, a veteran of the 1993 Black Hawk Down battle in Somalia, to kill them all, meaning civilians and anyone else, in fact, who was there as they hunted insurgents, Marcelo.
This is part, of a larger landscape of really an imploding situation in Iraq. We have a state that has really no center, and we have U.S. soldiers in a highly disorienting, highly problematic conflict that are turning on each other. This is an index, a barometer, if you will, of the general dystopia, of the general dysfunction of this occupation of Iraq.
Michael Myers, it's interesting to note there will also be another hearing scheduled later this month over allegations of five U.S. soldiers that are have been alleged to have raped and killed a 14-year-old girl. When we see this, when we see the conflict in the Middle East and we are seeing clearly women and children and innocents being killed, this really does bring forth, if ever there was a sense of open media, the need to take a look at war and that it is not as antiseptic as Hollywood has made it over the years.
Well, war is hell, some general said. And we know anybody who's been in war, and we even have seen the gory photographs and videos of war and the body bags, which we don't are not even allowed to see in free America these days. Surprise, surprise. People know that war is not a comic book strip. This, according to the private, this has been a search and destroy mission, according to his testimony, with the permission or the wink, wink, wink of the commandant. Now, having said that, and if these allegations are true and accurate, they're very, very disturbing and perturbing, and there have to be criminal charges. But, you know, I at the same time, as a civil libertarian, I'm a little wary and leery of hearings prior to trials, this pre-trial publicity. The best hearing we could have, if these accusations are accurate, they're criminal. And a criminal trial, court martials and criminal trials are in order. And that's the best way of getting the public to see what has happened and to make people accountable for their actions. I believe
in accountability. Well, it's true that, let me just say, though, that it's true that war is hell, as Sherman said, but these kinds of wars, and I saw this in Vietnam, where there it's unclear who on a particular day is the enemy, it's supposed to be terrorism, there's guerrilla warfare, there's confusion, there's a lot of civil war going on internally, and nobody knows, and this has a particularly corrosive effect on the people who are fighting, and also the military scrapes the bottom of the barrel. There are obviously good soldiers, but we had a story last week about people from the Aryan Nation being in the army of the United States. there are all kinds of people who have been affected by what happened to them. There are people who come in who are dysfunctional. If you put all this in the mix, the kind of war with unclear aims or the kind of war with confusion about who's enemy and who's friend and these people and no real understanding of what it is we're supposed to be fighting about because the mission and the goal keeps changing all the time, it has a particularly a corrosive effect, which means that you need to get your military out of there as soon as possible.
Well, you know, I don't believe that moral confusion prism that Mary has put us in. I don't buy that 1 second. I don't think we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, quote unquote. But even if we were scraping the bottom of the barrel to get in people in the military, you know, military has had also had a civilizing, an upward mobilizing effect on a lot of people. And you know your environment, and your commanders are supposed to teach you what you're supposed to do, how you do it, the rules of military engagement. And everybody with a common sense notion knows that you don't go out and murder people and murder civilians and innocent children and women, and you don't take people out like that. You take prisoners. You don't take people out. You don't murder them. People know this.
I am not saying that people should not be responsible for what they do, Michael. What I'm saying is that we have to understand the context in which the people who are on the ground find themselves, and it is even more important for leaders to be clear about what people are fighting for, sort out as much confusion as possible, make sure that they know who is in the military, that all of this helps. But eventually what you have there is a corrosive mix, and it is dangerous for Iraqi civilians. We know from this and from other stories.
Marcella, that certainly could be the case when you look at the friendly fire death of Pat Tillman and the confusion that went on there. It is harder to attach Mary's argument to something like an alleged rape of a 14-year-old girl.
Yes, it is. There is really two distinct issues here. One is the issue of the asymmetrical warfare that we see in these kinds of, let's call them new conflicts where it's not really clear who the enemy are, who the enemy combatants are, and the complexities that traditional standing armies have in pursuing those goals. We see that in Iraq, we see that in Afghanistan, we see that now in Lebanon. There is the more corrosive issue of what happens to discipline, what happens to morale, what happens really to human conscience when the general ethos, the general context lacks such clarity, lacks discipline, lacks a sense of purpose, as we're seeing in Iraq with the changing of the terms of the conflict. It is really a symptom of the lack of leadership, the lack of discipline, the lack of guidance, the lack of a clear blueprint as to what your objectives are and what's the timetable for resolving the conflict.
Yeah. So very easy to judge all of this on the sidelines for those of us who are not on the ground and fighting a war unimaginable to most of us to be put in that situation and what we, in fact, would do. That being said,
citizens of the United States of America make those judgments. It's our decision to decide why we're there. And I agree with Mary. Get out.
Well, that's a different argument.
That's a different argument, different matter.
All right. We'll move on to Black Coaches' request of the NCAA, and that is now that the NCAA will consider expanding a ban to championship events in the state of South Carolina, possibly disallowing baseball and football teams from hosting postseason games because the Confederate flag is displayed on State House grounds. Michael Myers, we should note that the Black Coaches Association wants a ban that was put in place in 2001, a two-year moratorium on awarding predetermined postseason events going into the state. Predetermined meaning if your team wins at the end of the season, that's not predetermined. But other postseason events that seek a state out to say they will host is what they're talking about. The governing body has continued that ban indefinitely, saying that there has been no significant change on the issue in South Carolina. And many would say it's good to see the Black Coaches Association stand up and say in unison they want this taken care of.
It distresses me, quite frankly, because I'm just so bored by attacks on symbolism and attacks on whether it's the American flag or the Confederate flag. We should we should do this and do that, or not do this and do that. We need a constitutional amendment. I mean, don't we have anything better to do than to, quote-unquote, protest and boycott states that don't fly the Confederate flag over the state capitol, but put it in the state grounds as a tribute to their heritage, whatever that terrible, miserable heritage has been. It's part of their heritage. It's part of their history. So on the one level, that distresses me. On another level is, I'm tired of blacks only having to come up and say this is racist. I mean, if it's racist, if it's bad, if it's wrong, why can't we have more whites say that? It's like the Mel Gibson situation. I mean, Mel Gibson's bigotry was not just directed at Jews, and Jews should not take just offense at it. Everybody should take offense at bigotry. So,
Marcelo, with a minute to go,
I want to get in it.
Yeah, Michael, hang on, because we only have about a minute to go. We've got to split this. Mary, very quickly, Floyd Keith, the executive director of the Black College or Coaches Association, said that he didn't know anyone who would be comfortable playing under the Confederate flag.
I care more about what it is that leads people to believe that they ought to show these symbols, make these statements, do these things, the underlying racism, anti-Semitism, whatever it is, and dealing with that than I do about the actual symbols. And too often we don't deal with that. We just deal with whatever the symbol is.
Yes.
Marcelo?
We live by symbols. That's the human condition, and these symbols index an atmosphere. They index a kind of an institutional culture that is very corrosive and very threatening to many of us. These are issues that we should all be addressing.
All right. And in fact, the Black College or Coaches Association is addressing it. And that is a group, Michael, that at least wants to see that happen. All right. Michael, Marcelo, and Mary, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.